Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, let's try this again. It's a minute past the hour. It's the 21st day of July, 2016. This is The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you want to participate in the real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, which, of course, is capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who is a third-stage guild navigator, but still not able to withstand the furnace-like temperatures of the man cave and thus has not folded space this evening. I'm sure he'll be joined at some point later in time by longtime inveterate, indefatigable chatroom moderator Lottie. Also there, you'll run across Anatole, Jugapunch, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, a merry band that will get bigger as the program goes on. For those of you who were kind of wondering, hey, what happened to Bob last night? Damn, these minutes, he won. We've got a lot of internet lines coming into this studio so that if something one goes down, I patch in another. Every Frontier internet line coming in here last night went to hell at the same time. And so, no, it wasn't like I could pop one cord out of them and then into the and then the, but the, no. The first clue was losing my conversation with Carol Baker. The next clue was losing the entire program. So, you know, they're about a little more than halfway through the program. Piffle, gone. Pfft. And so I just kind of gave up and went and picked up Ferg from work. Whee! So, among other things, this, as you know, is a listener-supported broadcast. And technical screw-ups like last night, not y'all's fault, not my fault, but it puts us in a bind. And because I've been trying to keep fundraising up so we can beat the Swede in July as we have every other month of 2016 and continue along on the Beat the Swede challenge. Oh, glory. So I'm going to be gone Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week, which means we've got to do some pretty significant fundraising to come even, because July the 31st is a Sunday, and that means if the Swede is not beaten as of Wednesday, we're toast. We lose. That having been said, with the way things worked out last, it could be worse, but we've got a $500 fundraising goal this evening, and then a $360 fundraising goal tomorrow evening, and then just 200 and 200 for Monday and Wednesday. So, all told, $1,260 to go to finish the month of July. That's one at 1260. Yeah, sure it is. One at 1260, two at 630, four at 315, 8 at $157.50. And I really can't. But anyway, it's also 10 at 126 or 126 at 10. Or 10 at 12. Yeah. 126 people at 10 bucks or 12 people at 126 bucks. You get the idea. But there's a silver lining. There are two challenges on the table that will knock down 300 of the 500 if they're met. Our dear friend Chris in Germany's Let's Beat the Swede challenge, and add on to it, not have Bob all stressed out going into his endoscopy where he's going to deep throat a garden hose. There's that. And that takes care of 100. And today is also, with many, many good wishes for it, today is also the 50th birthday of our dear friend Tracy. And she put, I couldn't do anything about it. I got the tweet last night. But I couldn't do anything about it because, you know, off the air. But it's her 50th birthday, so she put a $50 challenge on the table. So that would, like I said, that would, those two challenges, if met, $150 worth of challenges, would knock down $300 of the $500 hole we have. And, you know, it's seriously a big deal. Every month is a big deal. We got to, so, and I'm sorry it got to 500 bucks. I'm sorry that if this doesn't happen, it'll be 860 tomorrow. I'm sorry. God, I'm sorry. But that's how this program continues and has run for over 12 years now. So there we go. Yeah, Asa, I know. Brother Deacon Asa suggesting, courtesy of Frontier, you might want to consider changing the program from 3 hours of cussing and discussing to just cussing and discussing, because there's no damn guarantee on the 3 hours anymore. Believe you me, I know. You know, just damn. And that's true. There's every possibility, and Tracy mentioned it in her tweet last night, that we got smited. Or, as the saying goes, struck down by the Lord. Or at least, you know, Frontier did. Of course, Frontier's getting sued for some several millions of dollars here in this state because they have engaged in monopolistic business practices and have tried to put everybody else out of business, including decent organizations, and we used to do business with them. They just couldn't fulfill our needs, like CityNet. So there's that. All right. Moran Week continues. This would otherwise be known as Thorn in the Side Thursday. But it's just Moran Week because of what's going on at the Republican National Clavern there in Cleveland. And don't you know that the entire city of Cleveland is just going, enough! Go away! And the hookers are saying, yeah, we got to get to Philadelphia. Their delegates actually tip, and they're not nearly as weird. And there's nothing involving kumquats. So, if last night was bad, and last night was bad, I mean, this has been some bad TV all week. Tonight is going to get worse, because this is the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's big night. Huge night, right? But God almighty, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the photo by now of Laura Ingraham giving up all pretense of having any to give and just giving the damn stiff arm Nazi salute. I mean, wow! Anybody whose Twitter account does not live under a rock has probably seen that by now. I mean, it's just straight out there. You know, say hi, y'all. And lo and behold, somehow or another, Democrats and progressives suddenly figured out a way to like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the booger-eating future, anointed future king of America. Because bless his evil little theocratic, anti-democratic, inhuman heart. They let him give a speech last night, dumbasses, in which he told Republicans to vote their conscience, and they booed him. They booed them out of him. It's a beautiful thing. Oh, yeah. That's right. As Carol Baker just noted, Rafaelito is as cute as hell when he's shoving a shiv in Benito's ribs. Don't worry, he's still the same disgusting theocrat you thought he was. It's just that, well, it's that whole confusing the enemy of my enemy is my friend thingy. I mean, look, he was talking about conscience. That's a ripig licking national clavern conscience. Oh, that's like talking about a baptismal font at the Wicked Witch of the East's house. Or the West.
I'm melting!
Of course, when we're talking about ripig lickings and conscience, we're talking about, you know, we're not talking about conscience. No, we're talking about ripig licking conscience, you know, the important kind, where, say, a pharmacist can refuse to fill a prescription for some god-awful daughter of Eve's filthy slut medicine because Jeebus, and call it conscience. Right? Or where somebody in Talibandiana can refuse to cater a gay wedding and bring shitty right-wing Christian pizza to the party and call that conscience. That's the conscience that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time, that's the kind of conscience that he's talking about. Well, good. I'm glad to know. Yeah, Carol noting, I'm not confused at all. Rafaelito's still a suck-ass. Pigs are cute, too. They still roll in their own shit. Bingo. And you know, the same with Rafaelito. But, man, he got them roiled. The New York delegation, man, they were screaming all them fun New York words at him. I mean, ripig-lickens is ripig-lickens. Is ripig-lickens. Well, I understand. Marty pointing out, as I typed in Nicole Sandler's chat room, I'd rather unhide and unblock TLC and watch Honey Boo Boo than the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And by the way, I thought everybody knew what Mar-a-Lago was. That's why I coined the phrase. It's a stinking golf resort in Florida that baboon's ass owns. And it's spelled M-A-R hyphen the letter A hyphen L-A-G-O, Mar-a-Lago, Mar-a-Lago, which I guess is sea by lake or, who gives a damn. But we got Hitler salutes. Up! That one's on me. 14 minutes, 6:14. Who had 6:14 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time? Damn it, Gerald. And the arms right out there. And to have done it on the anniversary of the, as Jim informed me last night, on the anniversary of the almost got the job done plot to kill Hitler back in 1944. Well, I mean, that's the goddess of irony putting in some OT. Mm-hmm. And so tonight's only going to get weirder. The big speech. I mean, we're getting very close to that degree of unsettling uncertainty, that creepy feeling that America had in 1964 with Barry Goldwater, who said, "Ah, hell yeah, why not? Let's drop a few nukes. Let's just drop an atomic bomb here and there, and we'll show people who's who." And his slogan was, "In his heart, you know he's right." And that was quickly followed up by, "But in your guts, you know he's nuts." That, because, you know, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has declared that he's not so sure that he would honor NATO's Eastern European obligations. You know, should say, and you know what that really is? That is tank country. It's cavalry country too. It's just broad, vast, sweeping expanses of things that don't look like borders. Instead, it's just Iowa, Kansas. Drop a marble, don't move. It just begs for tanks to roll across it, or in prior generations, you know, Napoleon's cavalry or Cossacks, Scythians. What have you. And so those Eastern European Baltic states, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini says that he's not really so keen on honoring the obligations that we would have in case the Baltic states were invaded. And why should he honor those obligations? After all, if you think about the mindset of Donald J. Trump, millionaire, he owns a mansion and a yacht. I may be a squooey wabbit, but at least I'm not going to Alcatraz. Then you understand that, well, hell, Baltic Avenue is the least valuable piece of property on the entire monopoly board. And the world is nothing more than a monopoly board to Donald J. Trump, millionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht. I mean, really? You're going to fight to the death? For the light blue properties? I mean, not even Kentucky Avenue or Tennessee? Let alone Marvin Gardens? All right. Oh, some breaking news. And I remember when we got burned because it was not breaking news. I remember when it was like a fake news story that the NBA had said that they were going to pull out of the they were going to take the NBA All-Star game out of Charlotte, North Carolina, because of the North Carolina Republican government and Governor Pat McCrory's obsession with where people go pee pee and poo poo. No, really. I mean, that's just reality. If you're a Republican, you have to be positively damned obsessed with where people go to eliminate their bodily waste. But this time it's real, because the New York Times is announcing it, and it's running around the interweb tubes like a dose of the salts, or like a dose of salts. The New York Times reporting the National Basketball Association announced Thursday that it would not hold the 2017 All-Star Game in Charlotte, North Carolina, in a reaction to state legislation passed earlier this year that eliminated specific anti-discrimination protections for lesbians, gays, and bisexuals. The legislation also mandated that transgender people use bathrooms that match their birth gender. Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly, the story goes on to refer to the National Basketball Association as the professional sports league most identified with engagement on social issues. I never thought of it that way, but I guess it's true. But the NBA said that they had no choice. That they had no choice but to move. In the statement the NBA put out, they said, "While we recognize that the NBA cannot choose the law in every city, state, and country in which we do business, we do not believe we can successfully host our All-Star festivities in Charlotte in the climate created by the current law. We look forward to restarting plans for our All-Star festivities in Charlotte for 2019, provided there is an appropriate resolution to this matter." Imagine that. A league full of billionaires displaying conscience. Well, somebody's at least somebody's doing it. The question is, though, is this a matter of is this one of those hard-hearted Pharaoh kind of moments? Where, you know, but Pharaoh would not let the children of Israel go, for God Almighty had hardened his heart. You reckon, and I reckon they will, unless the voters of the people of North Carolina somehow manage to toss these freaks out on their ears, you know, or asses. They probably will dig in their heels. Well, hell no, we're just protecting American freedom. We're protecting freedom to go pee-pee the way Jesus wants us to pee-pee. Because, you know, that's where the Republican Party is. Beautiful, right? Yeah. Hey, big thanks are in order. I am happy. I am very happy to announce that the challenge by both Chris and Tracy has been matched, and then some, courtesy of Mark. Mark in Michigan. Thank you very kindly, Mark. That we have been, we have now. We got $100 to go on the evening. $460 to go on the week, and $860 to go in the month of July. So $100 to go on the evening, and $460 to go to knock out tonight and tomorrow, and $860 to go to knock out July, so that we will actually beat the Swede. Thank you very kindly, Mark, up in Michigan. I can't thank you enough. I really, really can't. So, what else? The world does continue to turn, even though most attention of people who do this kind of thing is focused on Cleveland. Frankly, the whole sorry thing in Cleveland just kind of nauseates me. But there's other stuff out there. Yeah. And I don't necessarily know the dynamics of this sort of outrageous conduct. And of course we're talking about police conduct. Mercifully, there's nobody dead out of this story. just shot. A black man has been shot by the police in the Miami area. Happened earlier this week. The man had his hands in the air. He was laying partially on his back. The actual shooting wasn't captured. But the man, Charles Kinsey, was lying on his back with his hands up, screaming to police, begging them, trying to make them understand that the person sitting in the middle of the road next to him had a toy truck in his hand and not a firearm. This is just, I mean, this is how quickly police can go from conduct to misconduct. The other guy, who would otherwise be considered a grown adult, is autistic. I mean, he's there, but he's not there. By way of an excuse for shooting Mr. Kinsey in the leg, a representative of the incredibly powerful police union has said that the officer who pulled the trigger was trying to protect Mr. Kinsey by trying to kill the autistic guy. This is not easy, but it is real. You'll have to use your minds to recreate a scene of green grass and hot pavement, of distant fencing, and a viewpoint taken from a nearby building, of an otherwise grown man sitting in the middle of the street, and his caregiver, Charles Kinsey, laying down with his arms up in the air. You'll have to do that while the audio plays. Charles Kinsey, a therapist at an assisted living facility in North Miami, went outside on July 18th to calm down an autistic patient who had run away. Police officers were called in when someone took the patient's toy truck for a gun. Per police orders, Kinsey lay down with his hands up and tried to get his patient to do the same. Roll on my stomach, he says. Rinaldo, lay on your stomach. Lay down on your stomach, too. Lay down on your stomach. This is from the guy, the black man with his hands in the air. The shut-ups are coming from the autistic man.
Shut up! Shut up, you idiot!
All he has is a toy truck in his hand. A toy truck. I'm a behavioral therapist at a group home. That's all it is. That's all it is. There is no need for guns, Mr. Kinsey yells out. Because, see, Mr. Kinsey is a black man with his arms in the air. And the police are, well, you know, the police. And so Mr. Kinsey understands at that point in time that he is mere seconds from the end of the universe for him. At the same time, he's trying to calm down Ronaldo. So that goes on. Please be still. Please be still. Lay on your stomach, Ronaldo. And then in language that can only best be described as Orwellian, a statement from the police department said that during the negotiation, and, well, what a novel word for what's going on here, a negotiation. There's no negotiation. I want to be as sympathetic and empathetic as I possibly can. I'm pretty sure that Ronaldo was not negotiating or aware that there were any negotiations taking place. Mr. Kinsey, who is, for all he knows, milliseconds from death, because the police are absolutely drowning in paranoia and fear. Well, during the negotiation, according to the police department, one officer discharged his weapon, striking the individual in his leg, striking the employee. Yeah.
He's like, please don't shoot me. But why they shot the black boy and not the fat boy?
You know, because the thing with the blacks, you know.
So that's the aftermath. Why they shot the black boy and not the fat boy? Because, and you heard the other voice, because they're the police. And what you see in the aftermath there is the police coming over, and they took the autistic kid, who they finally got to roll onto his stomach, and they're cuffing him. Meanwhile, you know that line about how the officer discharged his weapon during the negotiation? Now, that kind of makes it sound like, yeah, oopsie, I slipped, bang. Oops, blam, pray. Thoughts and prayers. No, sunshine, no. It was bam, bam, bam. And the way it's reported at the Washington Post is that Kinsey was hit at least once in his leg. Interviewed by WSVN, Charles Kinsey, the behavioral therapist, said, when it hit me, I'm like, I still got my hands in the air. There are layers upon layers upon layers of what in God's name do you do? Well, one, don't shoot anybody, Mr. Officer Friendly. Pretty please? I mean, a behavioral therapist. What's he supposed to do? Ah, well, Ronaldo's wandered off again. Hopefully he won't go play in traffic and get all splatted. Yeah, we'll just see it. We'll just wait and see if Ronaldo wanders back again. Because, see, they because he's in a care facility, they have a duty imposed at law to try to keep people who are in their care and are incapable of providing for their own care from getting hurt. Had Charles Kinsey just sat down, said, you know, coffee break. I'm gonna go get a Cuban coffee and maybe one of those awesome sandwiches with the pork and the pickles and the ham and stuff on it. I'll be back. Ronaldo always comes back. If Ronaldo had gotten hurt, or killed by the police or something, the lawsuit would have been about 50 pages thick. Against the facility and against Mr. Kinsey and against Mr. Kinsey's boss and the doctors, for letting someone in their charge go off and get hurt. Failure to protect. So Mr. Kinsey does what Mr. Kinsey's job is. And, one, he sits down in the road next to him. This is a brave, brave, brave man. This guy has more courage in his toenail clippings than probably the entire police department. Because their answer was bang, bang, bang. How do we stop this? How do you teach police that the first answer is not always shooting the black guy? I mean, both of these people have dark skin. Ronaldo, that's all we know him by, is the one who's screaming, shut up! Shut up! Idiot! Shut up! I presume that because the police department has radios and stuff, that they know that one of the people there is sort of not really there. And so this is the new normal. They were treating it like a hostage situation when it was clearly not a hostage situation. It was a matter of treating someone who was not a danger to anyone else, but a danger to himself from harming himself. Yeah, the North Miami Police Department is kind of not saying a whole lot of anything. The city's brand new police chief, Gary Eugene, said, I realize there are many questions about what happened Monday night. We all have questions. I assure you we'll get all the answers.
I don't know that you will.
I mean, presumably... Charles Kinsey is in that position that Dim Leader once talked about back either before or during the Reign of Error when he was talking about tort reform, when he referred to people who get hurt and then sue somebody as, well, they won life's lottery. Yeah, by the way, Kinsey and the autistic man were both handcuffed. They shot Mr. Kinsey, and then they handcuffed him and kind of left him lay there for a while. Now, this is not, Alton Sterling got killed. Philando Castile got killed. They just winged Charles Kinsey. Will there be marches in North Miami? I have no idea. I mean, if what the cop union says is true, well, Mr. Kinsey is not the beneficiary of any mercy. Mr. Kinsey is the beneficiary of the fact that Officer Friendly there ain't much good on the range. And when you've got department after department, and they're all just little... I mean, some of this actually goes back to the debates inside the... In the Federalist Papers about, you know, how do you achieve governance across a really, really wide geographical area? And there was a significant discussion about whether or not you could have anything resembling a republic on a grand scale. And lately, I've talked about the fact that some of the problems that we experience in this country, for instance, gun laws or, hell, insurance, health insurance, the Medicaid expansion that some states have and other states don't. Well, these are environmental regulations. These are direct results of the fact that the United States is comprised of 50 petty kingdoms, if you will. 50 petty states. One as important as the next. I mean, look at the way the Senate is apportioned. Montana gets as many senators as California. Florida gets as many senators as West Virginia. And so every one of the little petty states is exactly equal to the other, kinda, except for the fact that the states in the Confederacy largely suck in federal money and don't put it out so much. But because you've got 50 separate countries making 50 separate sets of laws, you can't have anything resembling uniformity in law or the application thereof. Now take those 50 separate countries and drill down another level where each separate country has little countries inside it, counties. And each county has little countries inside it, municipalities. So this is the North Miami Police Department. And they've got a different set of rules and regs than the Miami Beach Police Department or the Tallahassee Police Department, or the Okaloosa Police Department. And all of those police departments are different from the police departments over in, say, Mississippi Stan. All of whose police departments are different than the one in, say, Minnesota or California. Now, with that degree of attenuation, how do we stop this? Because, see, this isn't just, oh, well, you know, it was a human failing. I mean, it could have happened to anybody. Both of the people in this video have dark skin, darkish, dark skin. And yet we know in other countries it doesn't go down like this. In other countries, the developmentally disabled guy is quietly taken in hand, cared for, and returned to the care facility, and Mr. Kinsey is paraded through the streets as the hero of the hour.
Wait a minute. What's different?
Oh, yeah.
In most of the other countries, it isn't easier to get a gun than it is a fishing license. So Ronaldo there is holding a toy truck. Autobots, activate! Holy Glock, Optimus Prime. Nobody really, you know, what? They don't have binoculars? I mean, couldn't they have got one of those SWAT guys like they had so many of in Ferguson with the umpty gajillion power scopes on their sniper rifles just to maybe, you know, no, really, officer friendly, keep your finger up the trigger. Just use your scope and look in there and see if that's a gun.
I don't know, sir. That could very easily be a toy-shaped gun. You know, they can do amazing things in the toy factories of China now.
But this, you know, this will be, you know, Officer Friendly, who squeezed off three rounds and missed by hitting Mr. Kinsey, there's not going to be any repercussions for him. Even if Mr. Kinsey sues, the insurance company's going to go,
yeah, we're definitely settling this one. Ah, brother, this isn't even worth sending out to half a phalanx of lawyers to work on. we'll churn the file for about $60,000 to $75,000. But once we've gone through some paperwork and billed about $60,000 to $75,000 worth of billable hours, we'll settle this thing. We'll cut the $1 million check and move on. Because we're your insurance carrier, and that's what we're here for. In 2 or 3 years from now, if even that, Officer Friendly will be sitting in the cop bar going, ah, you remember that time the autistic kid with the truck and I thought it was a gun and I shot the black guy 3 times? y'all said I'd laugh about it someday, and here we are, and we're laughing about it. Clarence with an email, subject line, Back to the Future. Bob, I'm starting to wonder if someone reinstated the Fugitive Slave Act without notice to the community. One kind of wonders if it was ever actually repealed. Maybe somebody had their fingers crossed. I mean, this is pathetic. And it's especially awful because you can't individually train your way out of this. The only way you get out of this is by hiring cops with high enough IQs not to do what Officer Friendly did. I mean, it takes a certain amount of brass, I suppose, to say what the North Miami Police Department did. They said the officers, and this is a quote, attempted to negotiate with 2 men on the scene. And that's when they get around to that. At some point during the on-scene negotiation, one of the responding officers discharged his weapon. Mr. Kinsey is not happy, and he has a right not to be happy. An absolute, untrammeled, unquestionable right not to be happy. Because he got shot! And out of it all, he said the thing that surprised him the most is that after they shot him, they came and handcuffed him and left him laying on the blazing Miami pavement for about 20 minutes. No kidding. Hilton Napoleon is the lawyer representing Mr. Kinsey. He said there is no reason to fire your weapon at a man who has his hands up and is trying to help. Yes, Mr. Kinsey has already lawyered up. You're damn right he has, and good on him for doing it.
Meanwhile, the best that John Rivera, president of the Miami-Dade County Cop Union, now the best that John Rivera can do is to say, and this is a quote too, sometimes police officers make mistakes. They're not computers. They're not robots. They're God's creation. I added the God's creation? This is God's fault? Really? The president of the cop union blamed God for this one?
Well, you know, he did make the kid all autistic and everything.
Well, so if the suit papers get filed, the first thing the cop union defense lawyer will do is what? Third-party practice in God? Who's God's carrier?
Hey, it goes without saying that Mr. Kinsey was unarmed, by the way, so he goes onto the list as another unarmed American shot by police.
Lawyer Hilton Napoleon has called on the department to fire the officer, and they should. But hey, this deck ain't nothing but jokers, okay? North Miami Police Department can fire him. Guess what he'll do? He'll go get a job with the South Miami Police Department. Or the Bogalusa Police Department. Or the Levy County Sheriff's Department. Happens all the time. Remember Darren Wilson? Yeah, Gerald, you're right. Kind of brings a new meaning, Gerald says, to act of God, doesn't it? Meanwhile, courtesy of Steve, a member of this fraternity of Steve, don't panic, just shoot. The officer fired 3 times. Lousy shot trying for a kill? Just how flat on the ground, absolutely passive, vulnerable, and cooperative does one need to be these days to survive an encounter with American law enforcement? This is beyond surreal. Sir, why did you shoot me? Kinsey is quoting as asking. I don't know, the officer replies. With handcuffs on, left bleeding in the street, was Mr. Kinsey in a safer condition? Like a fish on the dock, slid at the gills, I guess. Regards, Steve, in China. Even as he's laying there shot. Remember, we got to be nice to him. Not, you idiot, why did you shoot me? No. Sir, why did you shoot me?
And the answer, of course, is they're not computers. They're not robots. They're God's creation. We've got a robot. And as they showed us in Dallas, you can stick a hand grenade on the end of one of those things and send it in and blow up the perp if you want to. Yeah, that was our next step, by the way. Blow up the autistic kid with a robot grenade. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, we've got robots that we can blow people up with. Stop! In the name of the law!
Will there be a march in North Miami? Dunno. Don't know. Should there be a march in North Miami? I'd say so. Because it seems like, I mean, yes, Mr. Kinsey is still alive, but the circumstances just get more egregious with every incident.
Well, not all cops.
Sick of that. Sick of it. Not all cops. because it's pretty obvious that the all cops who aren't all cops aren't doing anything. I mean, this isn't, you know, this, I have no, there's absolutely nothing in here to point to the idea that the cop was a racist or a white supremacist. He was nothing but a terrified dumbass.
They're God's creation.
It almost makes me feel like that the real job here in America, I mean, Philando Castile, there really wasn't much Philando Castile could have done to make his behavior any more appropriate. There was not much more that Alton Sterling could have done to make his behavior any more appropriate. Walter Scott ran. That's not a summary execution offense. Okay? Tamir Rice wasn't doing anything. We have to do something about cop fear. Because these poor bastards are scared to damn death. Now, they're armor-plated, and they're armed like soldiers and not police officers. But under the helmets, behind the armor, behind the shield, under the gun, they are bowel water scared. And there is there's a discussion to be had as to whether they damned well should be. I don't mean afraid of the black community or the Latino community or the trans community or the gay community. Who's got the guns? There are as many civilian firearms in this country as there are American citizens. We have enough guns in this country to put guns in the cradles of newborns, and some do. Yeah, that's probably very true, Gerald. Gerald says, actually, I'm sure the cop lawyer will use his famous go-to line, "It was an officer safety issue, Your Honor." No, he did this for officer safety. To which all too often the courts respond, oh, okay. Because that entire spectrum of the country, of our society is scared. The cops are scared. The prosecutors are scared. The judges are scared. The probation officers and parole officers and prison guards are scared. And who's got all the guns? They're scared because everybody's got guns. They're scared because you can get guns out of gumball machines for all intents and purposes. They're scared because the gun stores will sell guns to mentally disturbed people. They'll sell guns to people who shouldn't have guns. Felons get guns all the time in America. There's a pipeline of firearms that flows from Wisconsin down to Chicago. There's a pipeline of firearms that flows from Huntington, West Virginia to Detroit, Michigan. There's a pipeline of firearms that flows from Virginia to New York City. And Georgia to New York City, and Alabama to Philly. And that makes for very, very, very scared, nervous police who, I must remind us all, are hired based upon IQ scores that show that they will not question authority. You got that 120 IQ, you ain't going to be no cop. Because, among other reasons offered, you'll get bored. Or so they say. You know, so what's the answer? I keep coming back to that. What's the answer? I mean, it's deemed civic heresy to suggest that an answer would be for the entire country to disarm. You know, I was thinking the other day about a line from an old Robin Williams stand-up, where he was, this is all pre-9/11, God bless America. I think he was at the Met, but he was singing the praises, comedically, of the NYPD. And in his own verbal fashion, he created the image inside inside the audience's mind of the, you know, the classic stereotypical new NYPD beat cop, and he said, and the guy comes up and says, "Ah, shut up, give me that thing, you get the out of here before I kick your ass." You know, all without drawing a gun. And those days are gone. Maybe some of it has to do with the sort of changing of the guard. So those old cops are gone. Instead, replaced with a generation of people who, I guess, wanted the power, wanted the car, the gun, the armor, the shield, the authority. God knows they're not paid that well. And then realize that they're being thrown out there into an America where everybody has a gun. And contrary to what Wayne LaPierre says, there's no way to tell who the good guy with the gun is until the gun goes off. Remember, they're all lawful gun owners until the trigger gets squeezed. Lawful to awful in a fraction of a second, just one consonant gone. I don't know if this has, and I would never suppose to give advice to Black Lives Matter. But I wonder if it's occurred to them that maybe while the immediate problem appears to be police, and it's certainly police pulling triggers, that the real problem, the real place where you stack the corpses like cordwood, is at the headquarters of the National Rifle Association in Fairfax, Virginia. You know what? I'll bet you, and I got nothing to bet with, but I'm strongly tempted to think that if some of the attention of Black Lives Matter was turned on the NRA, there might even be some Blue Lives Matter, the, you know, the ones at least who aren't members of the Klan, folks. There might be some cop unions who would say, "Hey, you know what? The Black Lives Matter people have a point there." Everybody gets treated as if they have a gun. But if you're black and have a gun, Philando Castile. How do we step back from the from the edge of this abyss? I don't think we can be driven back from it. We have to, as an act of will, step back from it. We have to understand that there's not a gun out there, no matter what that for brains Josh Feuerstein, minister of the gospel, says about his FN57. There's not a gun out there that's going to make a difference. Okay, I'll take that back. There's plenty of guns that'll make plenty of differences. But there's none out there that are going to make anything any better. Huh? You know what I mean? At least it sure seems that way to me. We can't be dragged back from this precipice. We have to turn around as an act of determination, turn our backs on it and walk away. Will we do it? Not as long as Wayne LaPierre and the organization he heads, the world's largest, wealthiest, most well-financed, well-connected terrorist organization, control the strings that move the puppets who sit in the Congress. We won't. Because if we turn our back on the abyss and the precipice thereof and start walking away, there'll be NRA members. Shoot him in the back, Gomez! Shoot him in the back! Michael and Madison saying, if I had a cop show. Well, I wonder if perhaps part of the problem is that we have a generation of cops that grew up watching, you know, Cops. Cops is filmed live on location. Mostly it's the white folks who have the guns. But you can't make that assumption if you're a terrified cop. And I suspect that at least the ones who whose minds haven't been turned to mush by steroids would probably admit it. But they're scared. The people who love them are scared. Just listen to them lately in the media. My husband's a police officer, and every time he leaves in the morning, I wonder if I'm going to see him again at night. Of course, that's a working problem. I remember when the Upper Big Branch mine blew up because Don Blankenship hadn't figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. And when the for-profit media parachuted in here and started sticking cameras and microphones in people's faces, time after time, widows said, it's always been this way. Every day that he took his dinner bucket out, I always wondered if I'd see him alive again at the end of the day. It's a dangerous business. Oddly enough, and the same applies to police, it's not so dangerous for the people who are making the big money. It's always dangerous for the grunts. And nobody's got enough money to pay me to be a cop if I was young enough to do something like that. There are steps we could take. Like, you know, hiring people with IQs greater than 120 and paying them accordingly. But I fear that we will not. So that's that's the filibobster. Hey, thanks, Roger. Roger jumped in on the fundraising. Thank you very kindly. And remember, okay, so thanks to Roger, we have, oh dear, I got to do math again. We have $96.28 to go fundraising for this evening. $96.28. And that leaves $360 for tomorrow and $400 for Monday and Wednesday. So we're actually approaching the $800 mark, which is awesome. Let's take a break. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Plenty more thorns. But you know the number, right? 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. The other line is 304-574-8178. And then from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Let's try this conversation radio thing again and see if we can get it right this time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, Jimmy, you know anybody in Miami that can give me a passport real quick? Oh, yeah, man. I got a cousin up there. He knows everything about everything. Let's see if I got his number here somewhere. Yeah, no. He works out of a payphone. Oh, yeah, I got it here. Okay. Yeah, he's international investor or whatever that is. Yeah, everybody's got a cousin in Miami.
It was 90 miles to freedom, but they took the risk. Though the ocean was all motion and the wind was brisk, the deadly gunboats never saw them in the pale moonlight. They were off of Kiowa, so by the dawn's early light, the gringo in the garden called the customs man. They answered all his questions, were allowed to land. The ladies shared a hairbrush and their husbands had a coke, and they were taken up to Chrome to meet with their kin. Everybody's got their cousin in Miami.
Everybody's got a cousin in Miami.
Everybody understands the impromptu. Dancing in the heat to the beat that turns your clothing clammy. Everybody needs to have a dream come true. In a third world jungle, not so far away, lives a natural drummer with a dream to play. He's the brother of the lizard and the flying fish, but he's enchanted by the pictures from the satellite dish.
So his mama packs his bag, knots his red necktie, sends him north to her relations with a kiss goodbye. He's bewildered by the plane ride and the immigration line until he sees his Christian name upon a cardboard sign. Everybody's got a cousin in Miami. Everybody is an aborigine. Dancing in the heat to the beat that turns your clothing clammy. Everybody wants to win that lottery. And the winning numbers are 7, 6, 5, 3, 7, 9. Hard to believe the city started as a trading post, home to the Seminole pirate and pioneer. Between the river of grass and the old Mosquito Coast, before the railroad claimed the southernmost frontier. I am umbilically connected to the temperance zone. It brought me life and brought me love I never have outgrown. Brought me one too many nights along that Biscayne shore, and one too many mornings in the Grove drugstore. In one way or the other, we're all refugees, living out this easy life below the banyan trees, smoothing off the rougher edges of the culture clash. We got a style, we got a look, we got that old panache. Everybody's got their cousin in Miami. Everybody understands the impromptu. Dancing in the heat to the beat that turns your clothing clammy. Everybody needs to have a dream come true. I do, I do.
Yeah. 17 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday of Moran Week. I just think we won't have another Moran Week for another 4 years. Darn. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's calling from the Dallas area. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Edward.
Well, hey, Edward, I was hoping it was you.
Well, it's me. Oh, I was going to tell you, you mentioned Mar-a-Lago.
Yes.
That means sea and lake and the land between, and that was Marjorie Merriweather Post's home.
Interesting you would mention that, because I got an email from Jim reminding me of the same thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I have another question. The movie She, when She Who Must Be Obeyed appears, she comes through a smoke scrim, and Donald Trump came through a scrim of a, sort of a mist when he made his grand entrance. I was just wondering, are we going to have to refer to him as he who must be obeyed?
No, because I just won't.
I beg your pardon, I didn't understand you. We don't have a very good connection.
No, I won't refer to him as such because I won't obey him.
Well, me either. Oh, me. Well, take care. I'm doing pretty good. I've got my pacemaker in, and it's firing away, so it seems to have helped considerably.
Well, hot diggity. Stay away from the microwave then, okay?
Well, they say it doesn't affect this one, but I still don't. I stay away from the microwave, you know. I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, you don't. I don't care what they say about those new graphite golf clubs. I'm not playing with them in a lightning storm.
Yeah.
Right?
About it. Yeah, well, I'm going to stay away from the microwave. I don't want to blow up or anything.
Indeed. Well, Edward, it is always lovely to hear from you, and I'm glad to know you're holding down Dallas for the for the Horn family.
Yeah, well, I tell you, all that area downtown, there was such a mess. I'm very familiar with it because El Centro and all that area, I knew the library there and everything. Don't know the library now, but I did 30 years ago. Oh, me, things sort of creep up on you. Well, you all take care and have a very good evening, and I'll be keeping in touch.
You absolutely do that, Edward, and my best to everybody down that way.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Edward, calling from Dallas. Edward, one of the storytelling delights of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Absolutely. And since I had a question from Smitty about Friday on the Front Porch, and these are things I never think about. You know, every time I say if you want to be involved in Friday on the Front Porch, you know, tomorrow, to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, I assume that everybody knows that that's Sparkydunc, that there are no spaces. But yeah, if you want to get in touch, if you want to get set up for Friday on the Front Porch, that's the name you search for, and then you send the contact request, and away we'll go. Okay, yeah. Let's see. Okay, let's go back to the cesspit for a minute. Man, I tell you, people are pissed. People are those little birchers. Well, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, and booger eaters are 17 shades of pissed right off at poor little Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger eating future king of America. Yes. Godzilla from Wasilla is really mad because they asked the folks over there at that website that rhymes with light and fart. They asked her to have one of her handlers translate her babblings into something vaguely recognizable as English about Ted Cruz not getting in line. And she was more than happy to comply. Among other things, Caribou Barbie said,
Cruz's broken pledge to support the will of the people tonight was one of those career-ending read-my-lips moments. I guarantee American voters took notice and felt more unsettling confirmation as to why we don't much like typical politicians, because they campaign one way but act out another way. That kind of political status quo has got to go, because it got us into this mess we're in with America's bankrupt budgets and ramped-up security threats.
We're bankrupt? We are? Son of a bitch. I didn't think a country that printed its own currency could go bankrupt.
Learn something new every day.
And then there's another individual who is very seldom mentioned on this program anymore. Well, there, that's perfect. You know, that's one of those analogies like you'd get on the LSAT, Carol. Have you considered a career in law school? Ted Cruz telling people to vote their conscience is like Donald Trump telling people to vote their intelligence.
Yeah.
No, we don't make much mention on the program anymore of Anthrax Coulter. She's just it's all just a pathetic search for publicity for her. But, you know, when you're out there in the for-profit media, and the Republican National Clavern rolls around, you don't have the freedom such as we have here to kind of blow it off and deal with reality. Instead, you got to cover it. And, well,
So she managed to find some TV network that would have her on. One pretty. This would be CNBC. Yeah, you might want to get the hockey puck. They do come in so handy. Roll it.
I don't think it's going to turn out the same way, do you?
No, I do not. I'm beginning to understand why Ted Cruz has been hated by everyone, every place he's ever been, from kindergarten to the United States Senate. And I must tell you, the only way I'm making money this year is on bar bets, trying to get, you know, Donald Trump in the White House. And I would have lost. I won all of them. I would have lost if we had made a bet on who would endorse Donald Trump first, Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz. Because Marco Rubio is just sort of standard establishment. They're very much against having borders in our country, so they're against Donald Trump. But Cruz started to imitate during the primary. He was imitating, picking up Trump's positions. You would think it would occur to him, every place I've ever been, everyone has hated me, my only shot is to tie my wagon to Donald Trump. Maybe I can be attorney general or solicitor general. And no, Rubio comes out, and tepid as it may be, he does endorse Donald Trump. It's Cruz who is the little bitch who can't get over it.
So,
no, really?
I don't, there's a lot of...
Oh, whoever the talking head is with the really bright tie and the white shirt, he didn't quite know how to handle that. Yeah. Anthrax Coulter just called Ted Cruz a little bitch who can't get over it. Well, I've been suckered in. You try so hard, you know, you work to avoid this stuff, and then there you go. All the hard work right down the toilet. But, yeah, because, yeah. I mean, I can think of other things that I would call Rapiolito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Some of them are probably worse than Little Bitch. But, I guess that has to sting. I mean, then again, maybe Rapiolito can... get his daddy to talk to Jesus and get Anthrax Coulter, you know, an extra lump of charcoal in hell or something.
Talk back and forth about whether appealing with red meat to the...
Oh, Anthrax Coulter just sitting there grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush, because she knows she's done said something naughty on the TV. Interestingly, you'll note they did not bleep Little Bitch.
GOP's base, whether that expands into the, I guess, the center of people that are undecided at this point, and whether there's too much. And I mean, the idea that Hillary Clinton and her people are saying this is, you're just too nasty with what we're in for next week. You know what we're in for next week, that, you know, orange Hitler and fascist and all the, I mean, I've seen unbelievable things already levied. So I know it's not going to be a love fest next week either. But is this helping get some of the people that aren't decided yet, do you think?
I think it is. I mean, that's part of the reason I'm not watching.
Who in the sweet name of is undecided in this country at this point in the game? And it ain't no game. Really? Who's of two minds here? Who is sitting around going, I don't know, Hillary... Trump, Hillary. I just can't make up my mind. They're both such excellent candidates. Who's doing that? Come on. Then again, we have this every 4 years too. This isn't a country that has a hard time making up its mind. This country didn't have a hard time making up its mind in 2000. We just got stuck with George W. Bush, even though we said we didn't want him. Outcome was a little dodgy in 2004. Ohio probably got stolen, but, you know, that's what it took to keep Dem leader in office. Wasn't even close in 08. Wasn't even close in 12. But this, that I, so what? Is there an American populace out there, a voting populace, who are just going to be right up to that last minute in November before they walk into the booth, just sitting there flipping the penny? Heads. Damn it. I guess I got to vote for Trump. I don't know. But here's the best part. You know why Ted stuck the shiv in? Raffaellito, that is. Cause the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini called his wife Heidi ugly and said that his daddy was in on the Kennedy assassination. Oh, it's just beautiful sometimes. It is, you know. Oh, going back to my question about can we fix our cop problem? Clarence wrote, easy access and propaganda. Bob, I think there might not be an answer. Human behavior training starts in the household where you were born. The way one acts is based off of what one is taught. Most humans follow the norms of older relatives. Compassion and hatred are taught at an early age. Low IQs are fertile ground for propaganda. The NRA spreads propaganda for people to buy guns. This becomes an issue of safety for police when they deal with the public. Could be. In which case, you know, what's the takeaway then? We're just, you know, what, screwed? I don't know. Hey, let's run out San Diego way and talk to Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bubblicious, how you doing?
I'm here and there's no beer.
Okay. Well, quick weather update from beautiful San Diego. I am on the... Did you ever, when you were a kid, and wherever you were when you were a kid, did you have Safeway grocery stores?
No, I did not grow up in the Safeway world.
Oh, okay. Because I remember the one near my home, back by the meat department, they had a machine that was like a carousel, and it was like an oven sort of contraption. And at the risk of frightening Punky, they would skewer these chickens.
Oh, no, no. Like, okay, I remember. Yeah, sure.
Like a dozen or more chickens. I feel like one of those chickens on a spit, slowly rotating over the grand fire of Mother Nature's world today in San Diego. We have gotten spoiled. The weather has been rather moderate in terms of not too cool, not too hot, until earlier this week. And, I mean, it's like, I may have to wander down to the Kroger and crawl into the frozen foods box if this keeps up.
Sounds like Punky's game.
Well, he doesn't like hot weather either. But yeah. Anyway, I guess I should hold my judgment until the final night of the GOP convention is in the history books, but I don't see it changing from what we've seen on the preceding three nights. So I would say when all is said and done, the GOP convention for 2016 will have been a week's worth of nurturing, cherished delusions.
I think that's fair. Or you could go where I was going to go and say that now that they've worked themselves up into a fever pitch, tonight the Trumpanzees are going to have both hands filled with poo, and they're going to be flinging it for all they're worth.
Oh, it's going to be bigger than a pie fight in a Three Stooges short. There's going to be machines in the lobby to buy insurance.
Why, I oughta, yeah.
like flight insurance at airports. I don't even know if they still do that, but it has been a wonder to behold. I don't know that I was expecting anything other than it's been, but it has just been like one colossal chunk of nonsense right after the other. And the way that they're telling it, you would think that we were back where we were in the summer and fall of 2008 with the economy, both domestic and worldwide, ready to crumble beneath us. You know, 700,000 jobs a month being lost in America. You know, the shit was definitely hitting the fan.
Yes.
In 2008. And in rapid succession, you had the idea of General Motors going under and all the assorted industries that depend on the existence of General Motors also going down. You know, the housing market collapsing. It was like one goddamn thing after another. And to hear the Republicans this week in Cleveland, you would think that we remained at that point or worse. And there's nothing in the realm of reality that supports any of these notions that they're putting out there. I mean, it's just, how dumb do you have to be to buy into that? I just, the people out there in TV land, I have to shake my head and sigh, as the old song goes. It's astounding to me that people are so ill-informed or uninformed in this country that they will sit there with a glazed look in their eyes and just nod their head and drool. Yep, that's it. Yep, he's telling it right. Yep, that's it.
He's just not politically correct.
So, you know, that was my take on the proceedings thus far, and I kind of think that that Trump is going to actually do a good speech tonight. He's going to use the teleprompter, but it's just going to be more of his crap, just wrapped more gaily, more nicely. You know, instead of the cheap wrapping paper.
You don't think this is going to be full on, full bore. I hate Hillary lying. You don't think?
I think there may be some of that, but I believe, unless I'm mistaken, I think the overall theme is going to be, you know, here's why you need to elect me. Yeah, he may preface his remarks with the usual line of shit. But ultimately, if he intends on succeeding in any way, shape, or form, he's going to have to put out a reasoned argument, because as things stand, despite what you're reading in the polls, the national polls, the demographics are working against him. Yeah, he's got a lot of white people. Yeah, he's got a lot of older people. Yeah, he's got a lot of non-college educated people. But he doesn't have Hispanics. He doesn't have women to speak of. He doesn't have blacks. God knows he doesn't have blacks. And if you looked into the crowd when they were doing wide shots of the auditorium in Cleveland, you very seldom saw a black face in the crowd as delegates.
Did you see the photograph of Paul Ryan with like all the interns?
No. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, they were all white, and they showed a picture somewhere else of Democratic interns, and it was like a rainbow of nationalities and backgrounds. Is that the one?
The Democrats were a rainbow of nationalities and backgrounds. Those were the convention staffers. There was another picture of Paul Ryan, a selfie that he took with like Republican interns, and my God, it looked like children of members cotillion up at a burning chode country, smoldering chode country club.
In other words, if it was any, if the complexions of the group was any whiter, blindness would ensue.
I think there were banners in the background saying "Brought to you by Wonder Bread and mayonnaise."
You get my point there. If Trump thinks that he can win with his current constituency, he really does have another thing coming. And he keeps saying, "Oh, I'm going to do well in the Rust Belt states where things are so bad, and I'm going to do well in some of these traditionally Democratic states because the people are fed up." He's masturbating.
What? Wait, time out. Oh no, you and me are going to part company on this, Scott.
Okay. Not okay. Go ahead.
No, it's not okay. It's Merca. I think he's got all the chances in the world. And apparently I'm in good company because even though I have said for a while that I halfway expect Donald Trump to win, not because he's a good candidate or not because he's got good ideas, but because Hillary Clinton is a terrible campaigner and a worse candidate. Well, Michael Moore jumped in and said,
"Yeah,"
and said Trump will win.
I saw that last night,
and you know he's got plenty of everything he could possibly need. It's not like his reputation's gonna take a big hit or anything. And frankly, I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong. But the problem is, over here on the same side that Michael Moore and I both occupy, and you know most of the Horn Family Community Congregation, there's a contingent, I don't know how large they are, of people who think it will be good for America as long as we stop Hillary, and that the revolution will come sooner. Which I think is absolute nonsense. 200 proof hogwash. I mean, it's not going to be any revolution. And revolution will be... revolution is bloody business in the first place. And I don't know why people want that. Bloodless revolutions are damned well rare. I think if Trump gets elected, we will have a revolution, though. But it's not going to be the revolution that all the Jill Steiners are yearning for. It is going to be a fascist revolution, Scott. And this country will be unrecognizable.
But don't you think that we have the capacity in this country, between now and Election Day, to put forward an argument, put forward a defense, if you will, taking it into a courtroom sort of scenario, that can point by point, bit by bit, moment by moment, refute with exhibits everything that they've maintained?
Scott, I love you, but who do you think you're talking to? I don't mean right now.
No,
I mean in your hypothetical.
No, you're not going to get the people.
You're talking to Merca.
Yeah, but you're not going to get the people who are predisposed in terms of voting for Trump. Those people are lost. Okay, they're going to hell, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I'm talking about maybe the 15 to 18% of people who you questioned a moment ago.
You think they're undecided? You think the number's that high?
What, of undecideds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is.
You want to explain to me how that is?
Trump and Hillary are running at something like 46 or 44, 46 to 43, something like that, in favor of Hillary. Is that the main number nowadays?
Yeah, it's one of the numbers.
Yeah. Okay. So what does that leave? If he's got 43 and she's got 46, run your calculator. I'm putting the bird.
11%.
Okay. All right. Maybe it is lower than 15 or 18%. And then you've got to consider, you know, Gary Johnson and
But there's another thing to consider. Scott, And that is that, you know, what we, you know, when you see those 46, 43s and things like that, and God knows there's been a 43, 43, and there's been a 44, 42, I think, you know, with Trump ahead. One, you're playing within the statistical margin of error.
Yeah.
But as best as I've been able to find out, and maybe I'm wrong, the 2016 election, and these polls, therefore, are, you know, national. You know, we called 4,712 homes nationwide. And then you get the demographics. Are you black? Are you white? Are you male? Are you female? Jewish? Christian? Whatever. But it's a national snapshot. We don't elect presidents nationally, Scott.
No, it's 50 individual elections.
And so far better to look at a map of the United States and start ticking off cans and can'ts. And there's a whole lot of Trump states out there that are just not going to be anything else. I live in one. I know some people got upset, and I'm not. I had an email saying that, Malloy said there's no way he can vote for Hillary, and I understand that. And you know what? It's a beautiful thing that he's in Georgia, because it don't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I do here, except for the fact that I've made the argument that in a state like this, voting for Hillary Clinton is actually a radical act. And I said that I would, you know, and this is also a matter of respect. When Bernie entered the race, he said, look, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to vote for Hillary. And I hope everybody else will, too. So, you know, not that I generally let people tell me what to do, but I don't mind taking advice for something from somebody I respect as much as I do Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And no, he's not a sellout for saying that. But well, I'm not going to tell anybody to vote for Hillary. I'll say this much. There are things, you know, if Hillary Clinton is elected president, and let's understand at the beginning here. And I have to explain this. No matter how hard we wish, no matter how many times we click the heels of our ruby slippers, no matter how many times we say there's no place like home, no matter how loudly we clap so that Tinkerbell won't die, Jill Stein is never going to be the president of the United States.
Oh, I know that.
There's a contingent out there that says, oh, she can win. She can win if you'll just vote for her. Good luck with that. Jill Stein's never going to be president. One of two people will be the president on January 20th, 2017. It will be either the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini or Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. What you get if Hillary Clinton, yes, I know, and I don't mean to get all soapboxy here, but just bear with me for a minute, Scott. I know, you're going to get more bombing. You're going to get more missile attacks. You're going to get more warmongering. You're going to get more bowing and scraping. The Wall Street. All of that. No issue for me. You know what you also get? You get an EPA that continues to function.
Oh, yeah.
You get a NASA that's, you know, still hanging on to the barest shreds of its existence.
Yeah, you get Social Security.
You get a Centers for Disease Control that is still able to do the necessary, you know, National Institutes of Health, Department of Education, Department of Energy. You get a government that within the parameters of this crumbling empire will continue to trundle along. And then, most importantly, and this is, I understand, completely selfish on my part, it's totally selfish. If Hillary Clinton's elected president, I get to keep on being alive because I get to keep on going to the doctor. Okay, because let's make it clear. The Republicans and Trump have said that the Affordable Care Act has to go. I don't like the Affordable Care Act, Scott. I don't like the for-profit health insurance industry. I think we should have universal single-payer health care. Guess what? The Republicans are not going to pass that, okay? They're going to go backwards. So if you get rid of the Affordable Care Act, you're also getting rid of the Medicaid expansion. And that means taking 100 million people, maybe, in the United States and saying you to them and taking away what health care coverage they have. That's not going to happen with Hillary Clinton. That will, by God, happen with Donald Trump. And that's one of those that there's no debate about. There's no discussion about it. So, I mean, those are the stakes. And, you know, from where I stand, I really can't afford not to be able to go to the doctor. Hell, I got to show up every 3 months, no matter how I feel, just to get my prescriptions refilled.
Well,
the prescriptions.
I'm in the same boat with you in the sense that I can't imagine what would happen if anything changed in the sense of the coverage that I currently do have, which is next to nothing. I mean, I can barely afford it as it is. If they changed it in any radical, misguided way, I would be totally screwed. I would be beyond screwed unless California was able to come to the rescue. And, you know, as blue as this state is, I don't know that I could count on that. And then there's also the matter of Social Security and Medicare. Under Hillary, they would stay better, stay the same with the possibility of getting made better and stronger and more helpful. But they would also not be tied up into crapshoot financing through equities. They would be paid for in a responsible way, so that if a stock market crash happens, it all doesn't go down the tubes, which you can't say would be the case under somebody like Trump.
Well, I mean, and let me add into this. And okay, I admit this is speculative. As bad as things are right now in terms of police violence, may I please point out that they are not going to get better under President Trump, but they will get worse?
Of course, he's the law and order candidate.
And that, you know, that's code.
I know.
And white supremacists and the sons and grandsons and daughters and granddaughters of the Nixon voters know what that code means. We're going to break some skulls.
I'm old enough to remember having seen that movie when it first ran in 1968 through August of 74. I've seen that movie, and it doesn't have a real upbeat plot or a happy ending. You don't leave the theater happily whistling the theme song, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Maybe it's just the cockeyed optimist in me, Bob, but I can't help but think, and at least think and hope, that people will get out and vote, and it'll be the right people out there voting in a manner that's consistent with not sending the whole goddamned country down the tubes, or maybe even the world. That's the stakes in this process.
Well, see, and that's and I understand your optimism, cockeyed or otherwise. But in 1964, America kind of looked around and went, I know, we just went through the Cuban Missile Crisis a couple of years ago, and we didn't like that at all. we don't need a trigger a trigger happy right wing maniac saying that he's ready to nuke the world. And so they came to their senses, and they didn't, you know, they didn't just beat Barry Goldwater, they stomped him. Okay? And that was an act of national self-preservation. This election is the same way. But imagine that. In 1964, LBJ was more likable, because that's how we vote here in Merca. In 1964, LBJ was more likable than Hillary Clinton. LBJ, who was photographed picking up a beagle by its ears. Okay? That LBJ was more likable than Hillary Clinton. In 1964, America voted as an act of self-preservation. I don't think we're that America anymore, Scott. I think we're the troglodytes under the earth in beneath the planet of the apes, worshiping the warhead. That's the America we are now.
Okay, can I, on that point you just made, can I give you just a slightly different take?
Please, help me. I'm just out here on the ledge flicking cigarette butts.
In 64, when LBJ was elected, it was less than a full year since Kennedy was killed. Okay?
Yes.
It was partially having to do with voting. Hell, the tagline on all of his spots were, you know, go to the polls on November 3rd or whatever it was, vote as if your future and your lives depend on it. Words to that effect.
Because it does.
Yeah, but the thing that Johnson did have in his favor was the fact that we had an orderly transition after a moment of madness and horror. Less than a year after his predecessor was shot down in the streets of Dallas. So he has that. But like I say, there's an argument to be made against voting for Trump simply by invoking where we were just 8 short years ago and how we got to be where we were 8 short years ago. And I think if they can make an argument and present it in a way to enough people who have their wits about them, that will do okay in the sense that we'll avoid Trump. Now, I'm not making any bets on anything else other than, you know, we'll breathe a sigh of relief that, you know, we didn't have a great choice, but at least the choice that we did make didn't end up with the fucking world going up and all suffused in an incandescent glow, you know?
Well, I mean, okay, so consider this. In talking about China, the Republican Party platform refers to China as barbaric. Suffice to say that the People's Republic of China didn't take too kindly to that. It was enough to make the Chinese government issue an official response from Beijing, criticizing the U.S. and telling the U.S. to quit, quote, groundlessly accusing China and interfering in China's domestic affairs. Trump has a little bitty hard on for China. Because remember, he gets a tingle down his leg thinking about Vlad Putin. Right?
Yeah, well, what do they base that on? I mean, that Maoism is coming back? That's ludicrous. It's beyond ludicrous.
Yeah, I think the Great Leap Forward's been accomplished. Right into the loving arms of capitalism.
Well, you think? I mean, look, go, if you can bear to go into a Walmart, take a look up and down any aisle in the store and count up the number of things made somewhere other than China. You won't need a calculator. Okay?
Right.
Well, and it's yet another thing that they pulled out of their ass, thinking that nobody will notice. And I'm just saying that there's a case to be made for an argument being put forward that people will notice and act accordingly. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't want to, what is he, said the other day, he's not going to go to the aid of our NATO allies.
Well, the Baltic states.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd say if he's willing to hang the Baltic states out to dry, if the Russians overrun them, then he'll hang out, will he hang Poland out to dry too? Germany? I mean, if you'll hang one treaty ally out to dry, doesn't that kind of mean that you'll hang them all out to dry? I mean, yeah, isn't the purpose, I mean, the whole idea of NATO is that an attack on one is an attack on all. And that was the deterrent effect that NATO had during the Cold War.
Yeah. And see, the thing is, part of that argument that I keep talking about to be presented between now and November to the American people, the voting populace, is bottom line, solid gold fact, Trump doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, ever. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
And that is not a bar to the presidency, Scott.
Well, God help us then, and I don't really believe in God, so I'm screwed six ways from Sunday.
I mean, I'm not being mean. I'm not arguing with you here. but since when has intelligence, my God, look at the 2014 congressional elections. You know, we overwhelmingly elected Barack Obama, and yet we wind up with with the teabaggers in charge. For Christ's sakes, they ran off the two people running the majority because they weren't weird enough.
Well,
okay,
and
I just want to throw one thing out there for people's consideration, because one of the thin and soggy little reeds that some people are hanging on to is, well, you know, it won't matter. I mean, I live in a swing state and everything, but I can vote for Jill Stein because, you know, the Senate's going to go Democratic and, you know, we'll be okay. Hello? That Democratic majority? That's a Democratic majority that includes people like Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp.
Yeah, I saw her the other night. She's a piece of work. I'd never seen her before.
Yeah, if you think that that's going to, if you think that that's going to stop anything, if you think that that suddenly Joe Manchin's going to find his inner FDR.
No, not likely.
Yeah, no. But no, they'll just empower that majority.
Getting back to the intelligence of the American people, especially in terms of voting, in 2010 and 2012, when the big change happened in both years in the House of Representatives, first the Democrats lost the majority and then even crazier Republicans got put in charge. That, in a way, does have to do with intelligence, and it has to do with intelligence because people forget to have sense enough to vote every time there's an opportunity to get out and do it. We're real big on presidential year elections, but we suck when it comes to off-year elections.
We bite. I mean, yeah. And that goes to the issue of what Bernie started.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to begin and end here, even if he won the nomination. It has to follow in 2018, and it has to follow in 2020, and it has to follow in Congress. The man is an expert at the workings, the internal workings of both the House and the Senate, and far more of an expert than Hillary will ever be. She wasn't there long enough. But it has to be driven toward, okay, now, at the inaugural, you say, look, I'm telling you right now, what matters now is November 2018 and the primaries that come before it. And we're I'm counting on you who put me here, this is if Bernie was delivering it, to give me a Congress that can put the things that you want into place. and to really, really, really drive that idea. Can that? I mean, really? Do you see Hillary Clinton leading a movement? Because I don't.
Well, maybe and maybe not, but I'm thinking she at least has enough on the ball to look at recent past experience. And if she is, if she wants to be an effective president where one is needed in a positive way, one is effective and needed, she's going to have to make use of some of the things, some of Bernie's wisdom in the area of these off-year elections, because it's not like one and done. It's like, you know, you've got to, it's a continuum. Okay. And I don't know how likely Barack Obama was from 2009 onward to do half of the things he said he wanted to do. But I think his supporters, in large measure, listened to him when he said, in effect, you know, well, we've got this. You guys just chill out and I'll take it from here. Well, no, we don't need him taking it from here, because you need, like Bernie said, the people behind you to constantly agitate and raise hell and call and write an email to get these bastards to do what you want them to do on Capitol Hill. And remind them that if they don't, that in 2 or 4 or 6 years, they can easily be replaced.
Well, and okay, so take this into account when you're talking about replacing people. How is our political system's in a mess because of, one, Citizens United, and two, the religion industry, theocrats. Well, I just got a note from VJ listening. He says, just in, Jerry Falwell Jr., speaking right now at the convention, just said that Donald Trump has agreed to repeal the Johnson Amendment that forbids churches from making political speeches.
Oh, God.
Well, I heard the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini make that promise a couple of days ago. The Johnson Amendment's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. It's not beautiful at all. It's a terrible thing. And take a moment to comprehend the import of that.
Well, I would be okay with churches being able to be as politically active if they wanted, provided they were no longer subsidized by the fucking taxpayers.
Well, there you go, but that ain't going to work that way. We're going to continue to give them tax-free status, and we're going to let them politic. I mean, consider that this was delivered in the context of an endorsement speech by Jerry Falwell Jr. of Donald Trump, a violation of the IRS code in and of itself.
Right.
You don't, well, you know.
There's a great deal at stake. I think we agree on that. And I think we know that to go one way, in that way lie madness. And in another way, maybe dysfunction in a sense, but not batshit crazy. Okay?
Yeah, but I think you have a much higher opinion of the American voter than I do.
Well, I'm one of them. And we've got two to account for. You're okay, and I know I'm okay, and all of the members of the Horn family congregation are pretty much okay. So what does that leave?
I live in a state with about a half a million not okays.
Well, yeah, I mean, our little group here is okay, but that only leaves like 218 million voters that we have to somehow educate between now and November. So good luck to us all.
I think that's the ground of my disagreement with you, Scott. You think they can be educated. You think, and I'm not putting you down, okay? I'm not criticizing. I'm not being mean.
No, I know.
You've got this idea that the American voter can be educated, that if we just present them with the facts and the figures, and a couple of charts and maybe a graph or two, we can show them just how important this is and how they have to do this for, you know, you got to do the right thing, America. And then America, or at least enough of America, will go, oh, okay.
Well, do you
I have no empirical evidence upon which to base an ability to agree with you on that.
Well, I'm just saying that the American people, despite or maybe in support of their capabilities intellectually, have the capacity to be influenced. And the way that we do that in this country is news outlets, so let's not go there. But we also do it through political advertising. And I don't see that people will be putting, $1.5 billion, $2 billion into that enterprise before this election cycle is over, if they didn't think that they were getting something in terms of a return on their investment. I mean, you don't run ads simply to make the TV and radio stations rich. You run ads to get your message out there so that those who see it could well be influenced.
Okay. And who's going to have, well, the Koch brothers said they were going to pour $1 billion in.
Yeah.
I'm in for $1 billion.
And you know that Hillary has got a shit pot full of money. And her PACs do also.
Sure. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. I believe me, I'm arguing again. I'm arguing my position, hoping I'm wrong.
Oh, I know. And see, another thing, and I can't really tell until tonight is over with the GOP convention, but I am not entirely convinced that the grand old party is totally on board with Trump. I mean, he may be the nominee, according to the figures. He may be the nominee in terms of whose face is on the poster. But I'll bet you there's going to be more than a few people who, when it comes time to pull the lever or fill in the oval in November, they're going to ignore his name on the list and do Hillary or do Gary Johnson with Bill Weld, which doesn't, I mean, that hurts Trump more than it hurts Hillary. I mean, if they vote for Hillary, that's
all.
Oh,
but my God, Scott, the margins are so razor thin. I mean, understand, if it's 11%, if it's 15%, like you said, all you got to do is have 7.6.
Well, but that's my point. Because things are so dire and the margins are so thin, every vote literally is going to count this time around.
No, it's not. My vote doesn't count.
Well, all right, I get that. But
and in Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi, Stan, none of those votes count, not if they're Democrats.
But on our side, in places where it counts that it counts, those votes are going to count more than ever.
You're talking about Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, maybe New Mexico, New York, Jersey.
Yeah, the traditional 10 or 12 battleground states that vary very little from election to election.
Well, you've got, okay, for let's talk about Wisconsin. Wisconsin's Democratic primary stomped the living bejesus out of Hillary. And I can tell you that there is a very, very strong, proud, progressive tradition in Wisconsin and Minnesota that has a lot of people in it that are members of the Never Hillary Brigade. Okay?
Do you mean Never Hillary in the sense of Jill Stein or in the sense of Trump?
It doesn't matter. A vote for Jill Stein helps Trump.
Yeah, I know.
In some polling at this point in time, she's behind in Ohio. At this point, she's behind in Florida.
It does matter in a sense in Wisconsin and Minnesota, in the sense that, if they vote for Trump, if they're leaning toward voting for Trump, the Never Hillary folks between now and November could be convinced to do otherwise. Now, the ones who vote for Stein, I don't know that that's necessarily true, although it could be. it could be true that they can be convinced to think again. What's that old thing that carpenters say? You know, measure twice, cut once. Yeah.
But see, this is, you know, this is where I come down, and maybe we're just running in circles here. Maybe I don't know.
That's the only exercise.
But
I get.
Remember when we were talking about Brexit?
Yeah.
And I said, if you voted on the side that the racists and the fascists voted on, you've got to, it's not you're a fascist or you're a racist, but if they were on the winning side, then you have a racism and fascism problem, or a bigotry problem, or a xenophobia problem, however we want to characterize it. Now, if we're talking about a margin of seven, if we're talking about 15% undecided, and that means 7.500001 is victory.
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling me that you don't think 0.0000001 of the electorate in this country is racist or misogynistic or homophobic or all of the above?
Well, yeah. I mean, those people are the lost, okay? There's nothing that I can say to any of those folks to convince them to straighten up and fly right, okay?
Okay.
And yeah, I can see where their manner of participation is going to be critical to the cause of freedom and maybe the future of the country and maybe even the world. All right. Yeah, I get that.
I mean, the point that I'm trying to make is that when you're messing with margins this small, it doesn't take a lot to tip the balance.
Oh, I know. But in fairness to the math and the situation, we're almost out of July, which leaves August, September, October, and the first, 8 days of November. A lot can happen. That's like an eternity.
Yeah, God only knows how many October surprises are waiting for Hillary.
Oh, I know. And then there's also the idea, I keep mentioning Gary Johnson and Bill Weld. They will have an influence. I'm not saying that they can win, but I think they will have an influence. And if they draw anybody, the predominant voters that they will draw in terms of support will be from Trump voters. They might get a few libertarian-type Democrat votes, but they're going to hurt Trump more than they're going to hurt Hillary, those that go down the libertarian road.
And what do the Jill Steiners do?
Well, they would be a vote for her. Obviously, is going to be a vote against Hillary because people voting for Jill Stein are not native Trump supporters. I wouldn't think.
No.
I bet you when they count up the votes in the wake of the election in November, there will be more people having voted for the Libertarian folks than the Green Party folks this time around. that's just my take on it.
Well, quite possibly. Hey, Scott, I've enjoyed the conversation, but I got to roll because I want to make sure everybody gets in who wants to get in.
Okay, Bob, stay positive. Keep your sunny side up, man, and don't stop thinking about tomorrow and believe like you never did before. You know, that's all we can do is always do right. It will gratify some and astonish the rest.
It's the 69 I think, Mets. All I can't see Hillary as the 69 Mets, and you got to believe. But I appreciate the sentiment from which it comes, Scott.
All right, man. Take care.
Later. Bye to Punky.
Bye, Punky.
And let's keep things rolling and run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah.
How you doing? It's Kevin. How you doing?
What's going on, Kevin?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go, man.
Yeah, I switched from a speaker to the regular. Okay. Well, I read an article in the Harper Current the other day that Connecticut is actually in play for Trump because of our quote, great governor, who's Democratic governor, Malloy, who's really not, he's the least favorite, he's had the least favorable ratings ever from a Connecticut governor, really. You know, in many years, he's got even least favorable ratings than our convicted ex-governor Republican John Rowland when he left office. That's how bad Malloy's doing right now in Connecticut.
Nice.
So, you know, and then with the with these mergers and all that nonsense that David Schroeder's written about, the fact that the big layoffs that he's done in the state of Connecticut, he betrayed the unions in the state, so I don't know, like, the enthusiasm gap, is not there for the Democratic Party. And, I'm not saying that the union people that got fired might not go vote for Trump, but they might not go vote at all, But people are ticked. The article states that it's the first time in a while that, a Democratic president could lose Connecticut. Not that it'll happen, but it goes to your point.
Anything could happen, Kevin. We're talking about the most unpopular Democratic presidential candidate in the modern history of the party.
Right. And Bernie Sanders came close to beating Hillary in Connecticut, too. It was a very close race.
Yeah.
Closer than he ever got credit for in the state of Connecticut, Bernie.
Yeah.
It was a close race. I mean, a lot closer than people thought. I just wanted to.
Some portion of those people who made it that close have said they will hell and be damned if they will ever vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. I heard you tonight before I came on. You were pretty much right about everything. You're a realist about these things. You like to be an idealist, but I think you're a realist at the end of the day, like I am. But I was curious about what would happen. Malloy being so unpopular in our state, Connecticut, that what the impact would be on the presidential race. For the last year, I've been kind of looking at that,
This much is true. If you've got an only marginally popular presidential candidate, and you've got the head of the state party ticket in the dumpster,
he's the head of the Democratic Governors Association.
Yeah,
right?
that doesn't bode well for anybody down ballot.
And it doesn't
bode well for people, for getting people out to the polls.
That's more what I'm saying. Like, the unions are not, they're not really enthused. As a matter of fact, they held off their support during a primary in Connecticut between the two of them. So, and they're not, in the last Democratic state dinner they had, even AFL-CIO of Connecticut didn't show up. So, they're not happy, So that's what happens when you want to play ball with these, corporations that don't care about unions at all and the working class. Have you ever read the book? Because I think it's a really pertinent book to read for anybody. And really, because it's such a large book that, even if you read the preface of this book, which isn't that long, it would be worthwhile for anybody. It's called The Making of the English Working Class by J.P. Thompson. Are you familiar with that book?
Not at all.
Well, check it out. You can actually download a PDF file on the Internet. And I would even urge you just to read the preface as part of maybe the introduction. You don't have to read the whole thing. It's a humongous book to read. But I do urge people to read at least the preface and the first part of the introduction to the book, because it really lays out, it talks a lot about class consciousness and when class consciousness comes around, and it's usually when things are not going well. But when things are going well, the masses, the populations don't really focus on their place.
Right. When the proles have their bread and circuses, the proles behave themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, the working class is pretty easy to keep happy.
Yeah.
For the most part. And they don't take to the streets easily at all.
No, you're right. Yeah. It's just a great book. And I just figured I'd tell you about it. I wanted to tell you about it one other time. I had a blank when I was about to tell you. But But anyway, I listen to your show a lot, and I enjoy it, and I try to donate to it when I can. And
we all appreciate it, and I enjoy our calls without a doubt.
I told my mother I will buy a podcast to your show because I download it on the White Rose Society.
Yeah.
So ethically, I will.
Well, I mean, we don't charge for the podcast. We don't charge for anything here.
Well, no, but I will pay for a podcast subscription. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
You know, right? You have those available, right?
Well, yeah. If you go to the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com, you can just put in whatever amount and then say make this a recurring donation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll do that. Well, so you don't have a.
No, it doesn't say for the podcast.
You don't have an authentic subscription package, right?
No. Right? I mean, because we're not running ads, so there's nothing really that you'd get in the podcast that you wouldn't get just downloading it. I mean, it's not like we've got any ads
okay,
to carve
well, anyway,
out.
Anyway, I'll make another donation, kind of, you know, maybe I'll make a note of it just for the podcast that you let us listen to. So I think I'll do that within the next 6 months, okay?
All right, thank you, Kevin. That's
fine. I gave you a larger donation than I gave you last time is what I mean. I gave you more like a $60 donation towards that.
Listen, I appreciate it. We all do because we're operating on a model here that's not designed to buy anybody a Gulfstream 5.
Yeah, well, I'd rather, you know, help you out than, like, other things, you know? So, anyway, I really dig your show.
Well, I appreciate it, I enjoy our conversation.
I don't want to stay on any longer because other people want to chat, and I'm not a big talker, as I've told you, but I just wanted to add that little tidbit about what I've been following, the goings-on in Connecticut as relation to the presidential race, and I just wanted to tell you about the article I read the other day.
Well, I appreciate it. I do, and I'll check out the preface to that book at the very least. I'm glad you mentioned it to me, Kevin.
Okay, all right, Bob. Have a great night. Nice hearing you again.
Oh, good talking to you. You take care now.
Yep, take care. Nice Bye. Chatting with you. Bye.
Kevin calling from Connecticut. And both lines are open now if you want to jump in. If you've got something you want to add to the conversation, you're more than welcome to. Note coming from Cindy in the Great Northwest. Subject line, where are her crowds? I can't believe you're talking voting, like it means anything in the days of new improved electronic voter theft. We learned one thing this primary. The reason nobody went to jail for stealing elections, nor was there any real work done on Capitol Hill to end voting vote counting fraud, is because both parties are equally guilty in doing it. If this were not true, where were Hillary's crowds? I don't think one necessarily follows from the other, Cindy, but I do understand your point. Bernie was filling stadiums while Hillary couldn't fill a high school gymnasium. The Democratic machine uses the sheepdog effect to win elections. Get a leader, sheepdog, to round up the sheep across the land, state to state, race to race, gather and work them up into a lather and bring them in. Bernie did this, so did Dean. Then you take out the sheepdog and steal the sheep. Question is, we don't know if the shepherd is dead yet. But when it gets to that point in the Democratic Convention, will you stay in the sheep pack and go with the new leader? I won't, says Cindy. I'm just going to... Well, I've said what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what Bernie Sanders asked me to do. If you supported Bernie Sanders and you don't want to do what Bernie Sanders asked you to do, that's cool. That's, you know, it's your choice. But, like I said, I trust Bernie Sanders. I'm not going to stop trusting Bernie Sanders because I think he probably knows the system better than all of us put together. And he started something, and I would like to see what he started continue. Okay? That's just where I am. Hey, look, it's Brother Deacon Gerald. Hey, Gerald. No, it's Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, what's going on?
What's happening, man?
Well, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, you were absolutely right in terms of Trump. You know, way back, I thought it was going to be Scott Walker. I just could not. I just underestimated the racism and the ignorance of the American populace. But we are where we are. However, I like your conversation with Scott, the guy from San Diego, because you made it, you know, you made it simple what was going on. We would like to think it's like one person, one vote, but the way the electoral system is set up, it just doesn't work like that. Because now living in the South, and the South is a powerful place politically, you know. So the Trump has taken the South. You know, that's a done deal. So it's sad, you know, but he's the great white hope. You know, this is white flash. There's a lot going on with this. And I just have to agree with you. These statistics, I mean, that was my thing in school, statistics. And it's so close now. And then the unknown, not the unknown factor, but.
Yeah, I mean, look at 2000, Todd. And I, you know, this ain't about Ralph Nader. This is about the well over 10,000 Floridians who were registered Democrats who voted for Dim Leader.
Well.
Okay. I would say that there is not a nanosecond of comfort or ease or relaxation or even feeling okay for Hillary Clinton between now and November 8th.
Oh, she's got to be scared. Can you? There's no any. If he is this close, that means he's winning. And this is my real simple point. Republicans vote in mass. They vote more often than we do, and they show up. It could be raining cats and dogs.
Hard for them to vote because they look right.
There you go. And they see. And when you control the polling place, you control how many voting machines. It's a lot of subtle factors that they get into this. It's not as simple as, well, I'm just going to go vote. Because when people have to wait in line for 6 hours, they tend to go home. You know,
you know what's the longest I've ever waited in line to vote?
Mm-mm.
5 minutes.
Oh, my God.
It is much easier to vote in rural America, too. Not just white, but rural. We are well provisioned with polling places and booths.
When you go to vote in the city, you have to bring new reading material, make sure you empty your bladder, you know, maybe bring a sandwich. Mm-hmm.
I believe it. And there's a reason for that.
So I'm frightened, though. I'm just frightened.
Well, you got a right to be. I mean, if Trump wins, the state you live in is going to lose. It's gonna feel like 1861 all over again where you live.
Yep.
You know, brass bands in the street, marching up and down, convinced that they got the blue bellies on the run.
It doesn't matter what the guy says. The facts don't matter.
Nothing matters.
That's where
Scott and I differ. He seems to think that there's some undecided. I've said this for years. If you're undecided in American presidential elections, there's probably something wrong with you. Because the people with the one, you know, the people with the 120, 125, 130, 135, 140 IQs are not undecided. If on July the 21st, 2016, you are undecided in a contest between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, you know, you probably get, it's like that old song. Remember that old song, Wildfire?
Yeah.
She went calling Wildfire. Yeah. Yeah. Remember, Wildfire got lost in a killing frost. Okay? If you're an undecided voter between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, you're kind of like Wildfire. Because if you can get lost in a killing frost, There was something wrong with that horse. There was something wrong with that horse, and there is something wrong with anybody who is undecided between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
I mean, you know, before it was good against evil, now it's bad against worse, but, I mean, the bad is not, you know, come on, man. These people have polished their jackboots and everything around here. They're ready to roll.
Well, and see, I've got another point coming in via Asa in Vancouver. He says, you know something, Bob? I'm not entirely convinced that Trump believes a goddamn word of what he spews out. My suspicion is that he's doled out all the poison so far to secure this night. I'm inclined to sit back and see how he behaves between now and November. And there's that possibility, I suppose. I mean, I've voiced the idea that maybe this is the living political American embodiment of the plot to the producers.
Well, it has become.
I mean, what was it, 1996 or so, when Donald Trump was quoted as saying, if I was ever going to run for president, I'd run as a Republican because their voters are so stupid? You know, he said that.
Yeah, I know. Look, come on. That's why I'm just kind of disgusted. And I look around, I'm like, wow, I live in this place. You know, what are these people? Did they go to school? You know, the dumbing down of America has succeeded. You know, whoever idea that was, it has worked. It has really worked, because we shouldn't even be in this position. This is like a surreal type of landscape we're in now politically. This is ridiculous. This guy has no business being this far. And look at the henchmen he has around him. Paul Manafort, look up his history. Good grief.
Oh, it's nasty.
You know, it's very nasty. So I just, and what, you know, I just.
I mean, one of Trump's delegates got sent home from the convention, apparently, because of the nasty racist stuff he was spewing.
Well, it comes from the top. You know, and I'll never forget when they asked him, well, you know, what about the Klan? You know, the white supremacists are backing you, and the Stormfront people, and the Klan. Oh, I never heard of the Klan. What Klan? That motherfucker's 70 years old, and he's never heard of the Klan. His father was in the Klan. You know, come on, please. I just feel like I've been beat up. You know, honest to God, I'm disgusted. But, you know, we'll see. And I just hope that we don't have some type of bad terror incident close to the election, because that would just send him over the top. Because the type of people that he attracts, you know, they want this strongman type.
I wonder what America's going to think of not having an EPA anymore.
Well,
you know, when business is just free to pour any kind of vile filth anywhere they want to, and we just lump it because freedom, because capitalism, because we're getting great again.
Well, you won't be able to send a carrier pigeon, because they'll be out there.
I mean, but just dig that. With Trump in the White House, we're living in a world where the wild-eyed maniacs in the House and the wild-eyed maniacs in the Senate can actually pass a bill eliminating the Environmental Protection Agency, or repealing the Clean Air Act, or repealing the Clean Water Act, or hell, repealing the entirety of the Voting Rights Act, or the Civil Rights Act, and he, Trump, will sign it. Screw a bunch of Supreme Court.
Already.
You don't need a Supreme Court. It's just done.
Well, they have already halfway wrecked the government. You know, they swear they hate the government, but they're always subsidized by
them. And they're going to finish the job.
Paul Ryan.
That's what this is all about, is finishing the job, Todd.
While they go and get their government-subsidized haircuts, they have a government-subsidized bar up there where they drink. You know, they can have as many kids as they want because they're getting taken care of. They don't have to worry about, you know, medicine. But anyway, you know, somebody else wants to talk. I don't know, man. I don't know. This is not looking good at all. Because if it's this close, that means that she's losing. If it's this close, that's what that means. So something has to change. I mean, I don't know. What do I know? I'm just saying. I'm concerned.
I mean, South Carolina's not going to save her.
Oh, no. Well, that's what I'm saying. The South, see.
All that phony accent she put on in the churches in South Carolina, that don't matter for a hill of beans anymore.
Well, we'll see what happens. I hope you have a great evening.
Thank you, Todd. I hope you do, too. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, man.
Bye now.
All right.
Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Little reminder. We are a little bit below $100 to go for the evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly for making it that way. It would be great to at least keep on track because we've got another big, whopping big fundraising goal for tomorrow night and then for Monday and Wednesday, assuming programs get out, $400 more bucks. Grand total, what? Let's see. 768. Yeah, call it about $855 bucks to go, all told for the month of July. For this evening's part of it, yeah, a little less than $100 to go. There's Brother Deacon Gerald.
Hi,
what's happening?
Can you hear me?
I got you.
All right. We're cooking with gas now.
Not diggity.
Aren't you going to ask me what I've been up to?
What have you been up to?
Oh, you know, just working on a Trump campaign. No, not really. That'd be funny. That's going to be my standard. That's just what I'm going to tell everyone. What have you been doing? Working on a Trump campaign. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday.
It is.
You know what's a thorn in my side?
Name it.
Well, we're probably going to get into some food porn here, but you know how when you go to the comfort food places and they bring you like the cornbread or the biscuits and they bring you the butter, the little pats of butter in the little containers, and they're hard as a damn rock where they've been in the refrigerator. You can't spread that shit on a biscuit.
No, that's, you most assuredly cannot.
That's my thorn in the side today. I'm fighting a little bit of a sinus infection as well.
This is a lovely time of year for one of those.
I'm telling you, it's great. It's just great. Spent 13 hours on the road today with it. I went to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Really? What was in Harrisburg?
Pennsylvania American Water.
Ah.
Our good friends here at West Virginia American Water borrowed some water buffaloes and needed someone to take five of them back.
Oh, they had to be taken back.
So I took one back and two other guys took two more and I got to go in again in the morning. Great fun.
Wait, you got to go again tomorrow?
Yes, I do.
How many can you take at a time?
One.
Oh, well.
They're on a trailer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And only one truck.
No, I had a truck, and the other guys had a truck too. But it was the only people we could free up today. So, three of us went today, and two of us will go back tomorrow. But some beautiful country, I must say. Been a long time.
Oh, it is.
Since I've been up in that part of the state, and Western Maryland, and Southern Pennsylvania, Southeastern Pennsylvania.
Oh, yes. No, I love that area because, you know, you can see the mountain range off to the west, and you just see how the geology just comes down into that, down into that sort of plain. Oh, it's beautiful country. That's the part of Pennsylvania that's referred to in the statement. Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh in the west, Philly in the east, and Alabama in the middle. That's the Alabama in the middle part.
Yeah, yeah. Although I was, I guess it is in the middle, pretty much. Of course, then, I went through the reddest part of our red state, up in the panhandle there. Really why I called in, I got to listen to a little NPR today because, radio station selections are not, they're plentiful in that area. Because, you're pulling out of Morgantown and Cumberland, Maryland, and Clarksburg and all those in that area. You could pick them up for a long ways, but they're all the same station because they're all owned by the same guy.
Want
to take a guess?
Yeah, would that be Mr. Racy?
Yeah, that'd be him. But actually, I was listening to the public radio for the most part because it's the only thing that came in clear. So I got to listen to some NPR, which is something I hadn't done for a long time. And, of course, they were going on about the convention, the Republican convention, and, you know, this and that about Trump. Very enlightening. But I was I liked what you said about undecided voters between.
Well, at least Trump. We don't have to worry about that here in West Virginia, Gerald.
No, it's a done deal here. Probably the same as it is in South Carolina.
State. I think her. No, actually, she has the worst odds of winning a state in West Virginia of any of the 50. Robert in Morgantown was telling me the other day, her calculated odds of winning West Virginia are around 1%.
Yeah, probably. I would. There's no way. It's not going to happen. She is so hated here. Now, you know, I'm not a big fan.
Neither am I. I mean,
but I don't hate her. And, you know, that was one of the guy that was with me. Right toward, we got down around Flatwoods, that area, on our way back, and he called me because he, you know, didn't know what he had to do tomorrow and all that. That I answered the phone. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just working on a Trump campaign." He said, "Are you voting for him?" I said, "Oh, hell no." He said, "Well, I've been listening to him. I kind of like what he said." I said, "He's not saying anything." He said, "Well, it's better than a criminal." I said, "God damn it, they're all criminals. I said, some are just worse than others."
I wish we could stop with this business of Hillary as a criminal.
Well, I kind of did with him. I said, he said, "Well, she might go to jail." I said, "She's not going to jail." He said, "Well, all that email stuff." And I said, "That is just a dog and pony show. Nothing's ever going to come of that. Forget it. It's over." Am I right?
It was never anything in the first place.
Exactly. I said, you know, the truth of the matter is, inside the Beltway, that'd be inside Washington, D.C., for the people that don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, please, the email
thing arose out of Benghazi the way that Monica arose out of Whitewater. It's the same tactic. I mean, the GOP is a one-trick pony.
Well, look, at the end of the day, see, there's another cliche. The rich and powerful protect each other.
Where the rubber meets the party. Yeah, at the end of the day, where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, that's right. The rich and powerful protect each other, regardless of party. Now, you know, we see all this shit on C-SPAN and, you know, the congressional committees and all that. We see all that. But like I said, that's done. But, God, do I see so much of that on my Facebook feed. Because, well, you know, where I live. And the people that I grew up with are, well, you know, conservatives. But anyway, I really didn't have anything. I was just calling to be a smartass.
And yet you bring so much.
The butter thing really does chat my... I mean, that bugs the hell out of me. It really does. The reason I bring it up is we stopped at the Cracker Barrel and had lunch. A very big lunch that I shouldn't have ate too much. They've got this summer thing going on, and it was mixed vegetables. It was carrots and potatoes and onion and smoked sausage and a big old chunk of pot roast in there, all wrapped up in a piece of aluminum foil.
Ooh-wee.
Damn, it was good.
Yeah, I could have been tempted away from my usual country fried snake,
or the chicken and dumplings.
Yeah, those ain't shabby either. Ain't nowhere near what the little old blue haired ladies do down in the fellowship hall basement.
Well, of course not. But you know, when they're not around, it's a good second best. Hard to beat those down in the fellowship hall. You know, they spend all day down there cooking that big meal for the congregation.
Yes, they do.
I just hope the members of the cathedral appreciate what they do. I think they do. Bless their hearts. We need to pray for them. Wait a minute. This is not Wednesday.
Well, yesterday was, and we kind of got about half screwed out of the program by Frontier, so you know, there's that.
Yeah, wonderful Frontier, our aging infrastructure.
Well, no, it was bizarre, Gerald. It was. I mean, I've seen a lot over more than 12 years doing this. I've seen a lot of bad internet.
Not in West Virginia.
And I got three separate lines that come in here because the most you can get on any one is like. 10 down and 1 up.
Yeah, I had it. I tried it here.
And so I got 3. And all 3 to bed at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, just gone.
And this surprised you?
They've done a lot, but not that.
Well, I tried it, the DSL, but I've got the cable, and when it came available, I can't remember what it was when they first brought it. I've had it ever since it was available. They strung all new wire up and down the river here. I think it was 256K down and something, 20K up or something like that.
Megs, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 256 meg down. Yeah, yeah.
Well, see.
No, it was 256K. And then it went up to 512, and then it was 1 meg, and now it's like 50 or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I tried that. We worked with Shentel for a while, and they promised crazy speeds, but I couldn't keep the rerun stream going worth a damn. And it got so bad, I remember the one day I was on with tech support, a guy over in Lynchburg, Virginia. And son of a gun, if we were running a trace route, and Ben Birch actually had to do their engineering work for them and found a dead Knutton valve next to a disconnected flageolet about 7 hops up the line.
Yeah.
And I was on the phone with the tech guy, and he's like, well, I'll be damned, there really is one. Yes, there is. And that was like, at least I was A, talking to a guy in the U.S., and B, took it seriously. But that was like the 333rd tech support call.
I feel your pain. I have Suddenlink, and now they have a data cap. And I get emails about every other month because, my son likes to stream TV shows. Yeah. And so I get the email, warning, you have used 80% of your allotted bandwidth for the month. Your billing cycle doesn't end until, I think it's on the 12th or something like that. But usually it's okay. Usually we make it. Because they just want to bilk me out of another $10 a month for more speed is what they call it. When actually it's just more bandwidth. But when they put this in, I was like one of the very first. I said, I just kept calling. I'd call every week. I said, is it ready yet? Is it ready yet? Almost. And so when it was ready, I said, get your ass down here and get a modem in this place. So they hooked me up, and it ran great. I mean, it was, I came from a 56K modem, phone line. And this is great. This is super. So I've always had it since it was available. I mean, I can't remember when we got it, probably 15 years ago. Well, anyway, as it got more popular, they started hooking more people up and things. And, every evening during prime time, just like when it was dial-up, I'd try to get online, and I'd get booted off. Pages wouldn't load, so I'd call tech support. And even got to know the girl by heart, talking to her, know her by her voice up in Parkersburg. She said, I don't understand this. I've submitted this ticket like 7 times, and someone keeps canceling it. She said, I want to find out what it is. Well, she never did find out what it is. I did. Because I came home early from work one day, and the cable guy was sitting up at the top of the hill here. And I said, hey, buddy, I've got a question for you. He said, yeah, what is it? I said, I'm having, and gave him the whole spiel about what happens. He said, He said, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I said, well, I've submitted, you know, call tech support and all this, and they say that the tickets keep getting canceled. He said, yeah, and I'm the one canceling them. I said, well, why the hell are you doing that? He said, because I know what it is, and we're trying to fix it. I said, okay, what is it? He said, well, right down the road here, about a half a mile down the road, he said, the contractors that put the new wire up had some pretty poor workmanship, I guess. And he said, the DTs,
the glories of non-union labor, yes.
Imported non-union labor at that. They were from somewhere, some other state. They were full of water. So one of the contractors that came around and hooked everyone up, because they had to come here and rewire the house because I had the old wire and you had to have the new bigger stuff, went down the road here and hooked this guy up with the crappy wire, and evidently they did a real bad job, and it took them forever to find it. I mean, this went on for like 2 or 3 months. I was getting pretty pissed, obviously, because I was paying for internet that I couldn't use. I mean, it was useless. So I kind of feel your pain on that.
Well, it's frustrating when it comes to, you know, trying to get a radio program out.
Right. I'm sure everyone has a similar story.
There is a going theory, at least in the chat room, according to Hoghead, that it was simply a matter of the Lord striking down.
Struck down!
Exactly, because it was in the middle of a conversation with Carol.
And it's very possible.
Yeah, just... Yeah.
Poor Carol. She was worn out from chasing the sinners in out from the parking lot. Used up her new batteries. Been the cattle prod.
Well, you realize how much charge it takes to get through the hide of a deacon? I mean, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, I guess, do you need some Trump signs for your yard?
Yeah, give me about a half dozen, would you?
Well, they must be easy to get because they're everywhere.
Yeah, they are.
they are. I haven't seen one.
I can't lay my hands on a Jill Stein. I want one of those special Jill Stein signs with the sparkly unicorn farting rainbows on it.
I saw a Jill Stein bumper sticker the other day, and I haven't seen many Hillary signs. Of course, even if you had one, would you put it out in this state?
Not in a million damn years. The Snopeses will come and burn us out.
Like, please set fire to this structure. That would be the advertisement.
Right. I mean, you put a Hillary sticker on your car, it's like, you know, slash my tires and key the paint.
Right. Break the windows out. Or maybe even set it on fire. Yeah. Oh, I don't. Well, actually, I did have one in my yard during the primary, but it wasn't a Hillary. It was a down ballot candidate here local. And I will put some of hers out.
By the way, Carol has a message for you. She says, I was actually saving those batteries for my new Donald Trump dildo. If I'm going to get Rogered, I want to choose where to stick it.
Her Donald Trump dildo. Was it going to be huge?
I can't even think about that. Gerald, I got to get out of here. Thank you for joining me out here on the ledge.
Well, you know, we've all got to go out on the ledge every now and then to keep our sanity.
That is entirely too true.
Well, okay. Everybody have a good weekend.
And a happy and safe trip back to Alabama, Sylvania,
yeah. Okay.
All right. See you, Gerald.
See you later.
Bye now. Brother Deacon Gerald of the Building and Grounds Committee. Time to get out of here. Thank you, Jug of Punch. And thank you for a new subscription to David. Thank you, David, very, very much. David in Vermont. Much obliged, much indeed. That leaves us with about 55. Wait. $62 to go to finish up this evening, and then that'll leave us with 360 plus 200 plus 200 to finish July. So let's cross our fingers, and thank you very kindly. Hang in there. It's only going to get weirder. I got to go pick up Ferg from work. I guess I'll be listening to the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini on NPR. Ew. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thanks to all of you who listen, who share your thoughts, who agree, who disagree, who create, not me, but you who create this community. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.